You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz, the 27th of October. The rightful order of the basketball universe is plaguing the Utah Jazz. We'll talk about that, look at what team shooting trends mean they're going to go through a dip, and an early pack Friday yield some interesting results. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow. How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. Thanks so much for tuning in to today's Friday edition of Locked On Jazz. You can get this program on your iTunes, your Spotify, your Android. You can tell Alexa to play the program Locked On Jazz. You can tell Google Home to play the podcast Locked On Jazz as well. Thanks so much for tuning in. As I said, we'll discuss some Jazz stuff, then we'll look for some trends to see if we can see which teams are likely to dip here as we move into our next set of sample size. We're still small. It's a small sample size. On the other hand, five-game trends in the middle of a season catch your eye, so why shouldn't these? And, teams go on little bursts, and so why shouldn't these? And so we'll look at those, understanding, but more that if we see outliers, what's probably going to change back the other way is the concept there. So that's what we're looking at. And today's show is brought to you by Murdoch Hyundai at 4646 South State Street. Blake and the crew down there and the incredible value of Hyundai cars wrapping up the month of October, needing to get some things off the lot, and you can help them with that. And then our good friend Devin Cash of Equity Real Estate. So two longtime Locked On Jazz stalwarts bringing this you Friday edition. All right, we touched on this concept here at the beginning or at the end of the long extended show yesterday, and I thought it might get lost, so I thought there's probably some value to go back and revisit it. And it's what I refer to as the rightful order of the basketball universe. And it's a really kind of an absurd way to just say that everyone knows their role. And we don't have that. And that, to me, is what is most obvious right now about where the Utah Jazz are and, to some extent, where the offensive struggle is. There was a question on yesterday, just because we lost one guy. And it wasn't that we lost one guy and George Hill, who's scuffling a little bit. Is that we lost what was a pretty clearly defined order of how possessions and what the pecking order in a possession was. And so it's great to talk about our balance, and we're all averaging 14. And I even asked Quinn that the other day, and you kind of got this answer like, eh. If you look at our opening night, Favors takes 14 shots. Mitchell takes 11. And this is a little misleading because it doesn't count free throws, but we're not taking enough of them. Joe Johnson takes 10. Alec Burks takes 10. So that's like night one was Favors, Mitchell, Johnson, Burks. Okay, is that what we want? I don't think so. Night two in Minnesota, it changes entirely, right? Ricky comes out pretty aggressive, it's Favors again with 15. Now Hood 12, Rubio 10, Gobert 10. Ingles 8, Johnson 7, Mitchell 7. Now, then Rodney getting hurt in that game actually disrupts the rightful order of the basketball universe even more. Because you go into that game, who's shooting? And so that night, it was suddenly Rubio 14, Ingles 12, Gobert 11, Johnson 10, Mitchell 7, Cephalos 7. And the guy who had taken the most shots in the first two games, Favors, was next. Okay? What happens here, might as well finish this out, but what happens when this happens is you're coming up the floor, you're getting into your set, and I don't think you know where you're going. when you don't know where you're going, you end up with some awful possessions because it's not clear whose turn it is. Then all of a sudden it's the Clippers. We go Donovan Mitchell 20, Ricky Rubio 10, Alec Burks back to 10. Favors 7, Cephalosha 7. Because Rodney's not playing. And then AB, who took 10 that game, doesn't actually play the next night. Which I wasn't as stunned by as some of you. And then in Phoenix, we end up with 16 for Hood, 15 for Rubio, 10 for Ingles, 9 for Favors, 9 for Gobert, 7 for Johnson, 7 for Mitchell. That one actually begins to get close. Like the 15 for Rubio is a lot, but that might be where we are. Like this one are interesting with our 24 turnovers, that the game in Phoenix actually might be close. But what happens here is, as I talked about a little bit yesterday, the two possessions that jumped out to me more than any other were in the fourth quarter. The game's down to 5, maybe it was down to 7. Got a stop, 4 or 5 minutes left. Chance to really make Phoenix, who has pretty little confidence late in the game, start to get nervous. And we end up with a Rudy Gobert 9 foot floater with 2:55:54 left, down 8. Okay, we're probably not winning this game anyway. But you just got to the 3 minute mark, have a chance to put it to 5 or 7. They've stopped scoring. And Rudy Gobert 9 foot float. That's the possession, right? You're going to your guy right there. You've been down 15 at the 5 minute mark. You've got it to 8. Where are we going? Who's the guy? What's the set? And it used to be, okay, we're playing off G. If Gordon has it, maybe George Hill's making a play. They overly rotate. We can get it to we can get it to Favors or Gobert off action. And it's, you know, if you go look at our clutch play last year, Hayward takes 73 shots, Joe Johnson takes 42, Gobert takes 41, Hill takes 32, Mack actually takes 20, Hood takes 19, Ingles takes 16, 13 of them threes, all off other people's actions. And there in lies what I think is actually the offensive struggle every possession. Now, it's going to be obvious late in games. And Quinn can probably late in games do some things where he really slows us down, runs a bunch of set plays, puts us in certain circumstances. I think it's what he's going to have to do. The play after Gobert's 9-foot floater is a Favors 3-pointer with 2:30 left. Same thing happens against the Clippers. Or maybe it was Minnesota, actually. Was it Minnesota? I think it might have been Minnesota. Favors takes that bomb for 3 that was pretty ill-advised. But Derek's open. He's working on that shot. You want him to have confidence. He's only trying to help. He knows if he can make that shot, it helps the team out a great deal. He's done the work, and it's not obvious that somebody else should be getting that shot. It's not like he's sitting there saying, oh, well, really, this should be Steph's turn. And turn's such a weird word. But when you have the rightful order of the basketball universe, you know at least what your actions are predicated off. And if in that circumstance, somebody who's your primary option has run off the pick and roll, got into the paint, they've brought a double, he swings again, and now all of a sudden you're open in on the left side 3, and it's not really what you'd regularly want, but you know what? We've done our regular stuff. It wasn't available. I can shoot this now. That's probably okay. It's not great. Yeah, we're down 3 against Minnesota with 1:39 left, and Favors takes a 26-foot 3. With, from my looks on things, hard to tell. Shot clock looks like he was at 8. Not great, right? So that's kind of where we are. It's going to show dramatically late in games, but I also think it just shows it everywhere. It's got to emerge. I'm not actually sure, frankly, here's what I think is tricky. I don't know what the rightful order of the basketball universe is for us, right? Like, I think if I got 5 of you right now, go to Twitter, send me the 5 biggest, most shot attempts on the roster and who they are and how many shots, I think I get pretty dramatically different answers. That's what's got to straighten out a little bit for us offensively. This isn't, probably shouldn't surprise us. We probably knew this. I don't know. I would say we probably should have known this was coming. And we'll have to try to figure it out. Again, it's most obvious in the clutch. But it's going to be, I think, an issue all season, really only because of the fact that I think it's what's causing some of the turnovers. It's what's causing some weird low shooting numbers, because just no one knows exactly where each possession's intended. Maybe I didn't clarify that well enough. I actually think the turnovers are very much related to this as well. Murdoch Hyundai is at 4646 South State Street. So Blake Murdoch owns Murdoch, and here's the relationship he has with Hyundai. He makes a business decision on how many cars he thinks he's going to be able to sell. They've been the leading Hyundai salesperson in Utah, so he's generally pretty right on these numbers. And then when the next set of cars come in, he has to get those ones off the lot. Now, you've heard that before. Some cases, it's, oh, well, I'm leasing them from the car dealership, we just send them back. No, in the case of Blake, he actually owns them. So literally, he's got a Hyundai Santa Fe that's sitting in a parking spot, and the new one has to go in that spot. And that's why $7,000 off right now on the Hyundai Santa Fe. That's why the Sonata has great deals as well. I have driven now the Santa Fe, the Tucson. I'm driving their hybrid, the Ioniq. Be the only other person out there with an Ioniq. They're nice. I have not seen one in the whole time I'm driving. You could actually be the one person who gets a car that not everybody else has. And they're terrific. If you're in the market for a car, right now is a great time, is what I'm telling you. What I've learned driving Hyundais is the incredible ride and how the value you can get. And so I'd suggest you check it out. Put it on your list of cars. Even if your list is Lexus, Mercedes, check and see. I am not making this up. I have called Blake, and I have told him that our son is turning 16, and we're going to change one of our cars to the Hyundai Santa Fe before his birthday so that we can get the safety features and all those aspects of what we had with the car I had. I'm not a particular car guy. Every single one of our cars has 100,000 miles on it. But with the features we got and having a young driver, absolutely, we're adding a Hyundai Santa Fe to our house at some point. You know, we've got 7-8 months to go, but that's the plan. So 4646 South State Street, go visit Blake and the crew. I like to look at one thing, which is, we did this earlier this week a little bit, didn't really dig in. I love looking at shot areas and trends, and so if you're hot or not, and see what's going on. So one thing that's happened a little bit in our shooting slump is we're 2 of 15 on corner threes in our last 2 games. All right, it's unusual. We're 38% for the year, but if you kind of go back to the first 3 games, and that's where we should be, if you go back to the first 3 games, we were 14 of 27 on corner threes. Oh, so that was a bit of an outlier, right? Like, this is where some of our lack of offensive rebounding now, turnovers, lack of free throw line, you're putting an undue burden. The other one that is worth watching is our above-the-break three-point shooting. So we have not shot better than 33% yet on above-the-break threes. Now, we have 2 guys that are really poor right now, in Rubio and Donovan Mitchell. And Rubio is not going to be great, but he's not going to be where he is right now. And then we don't know actually on Mitchell. Like Gary Harris went through the whole season, as I talked about yesterday. So that's just something I like to keep an eye on. And I actually have programs that run it for me, so that's what I do. The other one I love to keep an eye on is out, and this is now league-wide, and then we'll do Pac Friday. Who are some teams that are doing something that, you know what, that's not going to last? So league average shooting around the rim is 63%. League average shooting in the paint non-restricted area is 38%. Mid-range shooting this year is at 40%. Corner threes are down. They're 36.3%, and above the break is at 35%. Okay, so that's where shooting is so far this year. And what I like to look at is let's look at the teams that might be artificially – these teams will slow down a little bit. They're shooting so much higher than the league, it's got to open your eyes. So in the restricted area, Houston Rockets who are at 76%. That's 14% above league average. They might be better than league average, but I don't think that much. Okay? So that's the first one. And frankly, their 76% is so far ahead. Cleveland, Washington, Denver, and Sacramento are all right at 70%. Those numbers are going to slide back down closer to league average. Offensively, by the way, you can have a team that's better than league average. Defensively, if you're way different, you better have a clearly defined reason or it's going to come back to bite you. Okay, here's some other teams that might take a little bit of a dip because of their in-around paint shooting, and I actually didn't come up with much because the Spurs are at 50, the Bucks and the Warriors, and they actually all last are better than usual in that, and that there's not. Mid-range shooting and then three-point shooting is where you get some good variance. So the Rockets, who take almost no threes, are shooting 61% almost no mid-range shots, are shooting 61%. They take so few. They've only taken 23 all year that I'm not sure that it will impact anything. The Pacers, who take a ton, are at 51% on mid-range. So Indiana, who's playing pretty well, scoring a lot, that's going to come back down. The Jazz are at 49%, third best in the NBA on mid-range. I don't know that that's sustainable. The Warriors are up a little bit, but that's usually sustainable. And Portland is just a tad up, so don't worry about it. Corner threes. The Chicago Bulls, who are surprising some people right now, are at 57% shooting on corner threes. That cannot hold. Orlando Magic, who are surprising some people right now, are at 50% on corner threes. That's coming back. League average is 36. Milwaukee is at 46% on corner threes. That's coming back. And Sacramento's at 46%. So a little bit of happy days there for those teams. Above the break, three-point shooting. Portland's at 46%. Now, they have Lillard and they have McCollum, but that still seems really high. Orlando is at 45% above the break three-point shooting. Orlando's three-point shooting is so outlandish right now that before you buy into Orlando, let that come back down to life. Let's see if Philip Rosman-Reich on Locked On Magic has that. The Warriors are at 43%, but they probably are the Warriors. And then the Clippers are at 40% on above the break three-point shooting, which is not way off the 35%, but it's at least keeping an eye on. So those are the teams that I think will regress. Who are the teams that should have some good news coming to them in the near future? In the restricted area, Portland is only shooting 44%. That is so bad. They might be bad, but they're not going to be that bad. Boston's at 55%. They should be bad, but probably not that bad. And the Spurs are at 55%. Okay? In the paint, non-restricted area, the Rockets hardly shoot there, but they're shooting 21%. The 76ers are at 28%, so they should get a little bit better, just naturally. And Sacramento's at 29%. There's not a big sample size there. Mid-range, you could be terrible and bring it back. Denver, who's having offensive struggles, you wonder what's wrong. They're shooting 27% on mid-range shots. That'll come back. Dallas is at 29% on mid-range shots. The Los Angeles Clippers are taking almost none. They're becoming a very smart basketball shooting team. They're at 28, in the league at 32%. And then Chicago is at 34, but I think we're actually in the range where you're in the rim. Corner three shooters that should come back around. The Knicks have made three all year. That's incredible. 3 of 15. That might be a flaw. Washington's only made four. 4 of 19. Memphis, who's been surprisingly good, is 7 of 28 on corner threes at 25%. They should actually have an uptick. And finally, the Clippers are 5 of 19, should have an uptick. Above the break three-point shooting, the Knicks are just so bad, 26%. Maybe they just might be terrible. Here's the scary one. The Rockets' above the break shooting right now is 27%. Now, they're gunning them, and they should be a lower percentage because of the amount they're taking. But they're not going to be 27%. League average is 35. They're bringing the whole league average down with the rate they are. And the Jazz are next at 28%. We should be higher. So those are the teams that I think will trend one way or the other. Now, defensively, if I could quickly, is really where you see it, because it just means you've played certain teams that are really good at something. So let's look at the teams that actually should get better defensively. Detroit is always bad at this around the restricted area, but Andre Drummond, because he doesn't protect the rim, but they're allowing 71%, and the variance is less here usually at the rim. The Warriors are the second worst team defending the rim right now. Might be their personnel, but I kind of doubt it. And then Dallas. Let's go to mid-range. Teams that are like, this is what's happening to us. Why is everybody hitting mid-range shots? Minnesota's allowing teams to hit 55% on the mid-range. That's why their defense is worse than the NBA. That will come back around, so that's good news for the Timberwolves. Dallas is 29th in the league at 49.5. That's good news for them. The 76ers are allowing an outlandish 49%. As well. So that's on mid-range. That's good for them. And then we're 27th. We're allowing 43%, but that's not as far an outlandish, right? Like the jump there from 49 to 43, that's inside. There's three outliers that I just mentioned whose teams are shooting outrageous numbers against them in Minnesota, 76ers, and Dallas. Corner three shooting. Teams are shooting corner threes against Miami, who usually doesn't allow them, they're only allowed 18, but teams are shooting 56% on the corner three, so that'll come back down. Washington's allowing teams are shooting 50% against Washington, so that will come back down. They can't do it all year. I am missing one. Oh, also Cleveland's allowing 50%. That's not going to happen. So that's good news for some of the better teams there. And again, Minnesota allowing 47% on Minnesota just seems to be hit by some unusually hot shooting teams. Their defense should come back around. Finally, above the break, 3-point shooting is at 35% in the league. And if someone's over and above 40, probably going to come back down. That's what the Phoenix Suns are experiencing. Teams are at 46%. Indiana is at 44% allowed. That's too high. And that's about it. Everyone else, Pelicans are at 40, but it drops pretty quickly. That's where I said there's less variance on those. So those are the teams that things should get better for. And then I guess the idea is some teams that are having unusual luck for you quickly, teams whose defense is being really helped by the fact that it's just a make-or-miss league. Teams are shooting in the mid-range at 29% against Atlanta. They'll get better than that. Memphis, they're shooting 31%. People will get better. And the Hornets, 32%. Those are probably not going to last. Corner three shooting, the Clippers' opponents are 4 of 19. They'll get better than that. The Pelicans' opponents are at 25%. They'll get better than that. As are the Utah Jazz opponents are at 25%. So that's a one for us to keep an eye on, is that teams will start to make more than that. And then finally, the Philadelphia 76ers are at 26% above the break. Orlando is allowing teams to shoot just 28%. Orlando shows up on a lot of weird numbers right now that says that their early playing well probably doesn't last. Portland opponents are shooting 28% above the break. Shouldn't last. It would be incredible if it did. Charlotte, 29%. But you're getting close, though. The league average is at 35, so we'll probably stop there. All right, so those are things. We'll look at an early pack Friday here in a second. Number-heavy show. It's what I do. Devin Cash of Equity Real Estate has been with us from the very, very beginning. And it's a cool idea that we have, like the realtor of Locked On Jazz. And that's really, in a lot of ways, what Devin has done and shown to everybody and so many different Locked On Jazz people. And that's what's so cool is that and everyone's coming back with the same experience. Not one single person has come back with anything other than exactly how Devin described himself at the very beginning of this process. And what the process, what he said from the very, very beginning was, I approach real estate like a school teacher, and I love first-time home buyers and helping them out. And there's actually, I mean, he's such a good dude. There's actually been a behind-the-scenes thing where he's trying to find a way to raise money and do something for one of our listeners who's had a tough time with things we can't quite figure out how to get it done. And, I mean, he's just amazing. He gave his clients 15% of commissions back last year in tickets. And so if you buy or sell your house with Devin Cash, he will give you Jazz season tickets, or at least the equivalent thereof. Some of the tickets that he used and got last year, those good seats are sold out, so you can figure out what you want to do. He can get you certain games or things like that. And I can run through from Zach Campbell to Tim and Whitney McKay to Ryan and Natalie Gubler to all the different people who've had the same interaction with Devin, that this guy just takes the time to work with you and give you a fabulous experience. Pressure-free has been the number one thing along the way. So call Devin, 801-759-1495. That's 801-759-1495. 801-759-1495 is Devin Cash. If you're looking to buy or sell a home, want a market analysis, or if you're moving, he can help you get the realtor in the next market as well. It's got a nice little program on that. So certainly call him in regards to that. Let's look at PAC. Points above average created. It's very early in the season, but there's some interesting things you'll see here. Points above average created means that if a player is using 20 scoring attempts a game and you compare them to the league average, which is actually right now basically the exact same as what the league average was a year ago, how would they do compared to an average player? The numbers are really high right now. They'll come down. But what's interesting is that the best players in the league are where you think they would be. So the best PAC player in the league is Aaron Gordon, but he's only played two games. So, and he's 6 of 7 from three. So that's not going to last. Giannis Antetokounmpo is at an incredibly high rate that's not sustainable, but really cool. Steph Curry is 2. LeBron is 3. Karl-Anthony Towns is 4. Orlando, last year's worst offensive player in the league. The worst offensive player in the league last year was Nikolai Vukovic. He is now plus 4.1 PAC. He's taking 25% of his shots from three. He's completely changed his game, and it's changing Orlando. It's really an interest. It's going to be a big story if it keeps going. So he's the fifth, from the worst to the fifth best. Capella is 6th. Which is not surprising. That's right. CJ McCollum is 7th. Victor Oladipo is 8th. What a start for him on that trade. Blake Griffin is 9. DeMarcus Cousins is 10th. And then some kind of bench players, actually. DJ Augustine having an unbelievable start. Nick Young after that. Rudy Gobert, Marc Gasol, Klay Thompson, Tony Snell in Milwaukee, and Kemba Walker. And then Rodney Hood, finish it out. Rodney Hood's taking 42% of his shots from three and going to the line a little bit. So good signs there. So those are the top players. One thing to watch on the Pelicans is that both Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins are really positive. And so if they can get some average play the other way around, that would put them in pretty good shape. The five worst players in the league offensively. Marcus Smart's played just three games. Tim Hardaway, all his money's played just three games. And Lonzo Ball. So Lonzo Ball is the third worst. Chris Paul has only played one game. Then Donovan Mitchell. Donovan Mitchell is -5 PAC right now. Like, it's the impact is huge. Jamal Murray is -5 PAC for Denver. That's you can't overcome that. Like it is a huge to have Lonzo Ball, Donovan Mitchell, Lance Stevenson, actually Jamal Murray, then J.R. Smith, Dennis Schroeder. He's only played 3 games. Zach Randolph, Harrison Barnes having an awful start. Dirk Nowitzki having an awful start. Jimmy Butler in his 3 games actually hasn't been very good either. Nor has Trevor Ariza or Terrence Ross. So keep an eye on that. Interesting, though, Tim Hardaway for the Knicks. But Lonzo Ball, Donovan Mitchell, and Jamal Murray sitting at the bottom of this list having a pretty big impact. John Wall has not started well for the Wizards. He's always kind of on the edge of not. Danilo Gallinari has not started well for the Clippers, nor has Austin Rivers, and yet they're still surviving. Drew Holiday is at -3 pack, which is really hurting New Orleans. Otherwise, not a lot of surprise names. Dwayne Wade's kind of where he has been for the last few years. Yusuf Nurkic has not been good, and Devin Booker's not been good in Phoenix. Other than that, we kind of move back into a realm where it all will straighten out pretty quickly. So there, that's your Pack Friday. That's a quick look at all these other things. And it's brought to you today by Murdoch Hyundai at 4646 South State Street, as well as Devin Cash, Equity Real Estate. Give Devin a call and have him help you out, 801-759-1495. Have a great weekend. Ron and I will be live on Facebook Live before the game against Lonzo Ball and the Lakers, postcast afterwards, and then back with you on Locked On Jazz on Monday. Thanks very much for tuning in.